The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. Welcome to a new week. It's a Monday. Ugh. Sorry about that, but, you know, comes around every 7 days or so. Not a whole lot we can do about it. And I guess it's better that Monday rolls around than it doesn't, you know. So I always say consider the alternative, right? All right. So I hope you had a great weekend. We've got a good show for you today. We're going to get a little heavy because the events happening around the world, but around this country too, are pretty heavy right now. They're pretty upsetting. So we'll get to that in a few minutes. Before we get to that, though, I've got some stuff to take care of. Like I said, I hope you had a great weekend. So last week, you know, I took Thursday off. It was David's birthday. We went out for our first dinner. Oh, somebody's already calling right off the bat. So we'll start with a phone call today, I suppose. Hi, who's this?
This is Linwood. How are you doing?
Hey, Linwood. Good. How are you doing?
I'm still learning.
You're still learning. Okay.
Now, yeah. Yes, Sam. Now, I want to talk about your intro into the Jews for Palestine and things of that nature.
Okay.
That is true.
I haven't even started on that yet, but okay.
That is very true.
Uh-huh.
But the Zionists are the ones who control the media.
Okay, you know what? I am cutting you off right there because that there is some bullshit and you need to do more learning, Linwood. When you learn, call back. The Zionists control the media? That right there, Linwood, you're learning an anti-Semitic trope. Okay? Stop it. Stop with the ridiculous generalizations and stop with the anti-Semitic shit. That's what we're going to talk about today. Jesus, I guess I need to start right there instead of with my fun weekend. You know what? Fuck it. I'm going to start with my fun weekend story because it's, I should have waited to take the phone call. Boy, Linwood, when you said you're learning, no, you're really not. You need to learn a little more. Maybe listen today and then think about how the conversation goes, because we are going to deal with that subject. But to call my show and start first thing Monday and say the Zionists control the media, that gets you a big
bullshit.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
Say it again.
Bullshit.
All right. So anyway, what I was about to tell you is, so you know that David and I went out on Thursday for his birthday. We went to dinner and we went to a gallery in Fort Lauderdale because the week before I had Rick Allen on the show, who's a drummer for Def Leppard and also an artist. And he had a show around town this weekend. So we went and it was wonderful. You know, it's nice when you don't have a lot of money to play around with a gallery. You know, an art exhibit in a gallery is free. They want you to buy something, but obviously not everyone's going to spend $20,000 on a painting. So it was free, and it was a nice night out. We got out, and okay. So David had found this ad in the Miami Herald a few weeks ago, a half-page ad in the Miami Herald, and it says, Impressionist, Modern, and Contemporary Masters, April 1st through May 28th. And it has a picture of this lovely Andy Warhol. It's a two-panel Dolly Parton painting. But it says, featuring works by Giacomo Balla, Jean-Michel Basquiat. I'm only going to give you the names of the artists that I know. Max Ernst, Keith Haring, Georgia O'Keeffe, Pablo Picasso, Andy Warhol, and probably 10 other names on this list. So it's up in Palm Beach. So it's a good, you know, 45 minute to an hour drive from where we are. And really, we've been putting off doing housework, like cleaning the house for weeks. I'm domestically challenged. It is my least favorite thing in the world to do. But we were going to do it. We were going to do it Saturday. I wound up Saturday. I had to take Allison's cat to the vet. She had to work. So that killed my whole day. The kitten, the cute little kitten, that killed my whole day Saturday. And so Sunday, we were going to go a Sunday where we're going to clean. And then David said, well, this exhibit is ending this week. So if we want to go, it's today or never. And we can put off the cleaning for one more week. Basquiat. Thank you very much, John Pelosi. I knew it was something like that. I did see the movie about him, so I'm familiar with his works. I'm not the most, you know, connoisseured art fan. I'm a novice, you know. Anyway, so we get in the car, we drive up to Palm Beach, we're driving around to find this gallery called the Aquavella, and it's a giant clusterfuck, but we finally find it. We get our masks on, we walk in, and you walk into the front room of this gallery, and there are the two pictures of Dolly Parton. They're lovely. And then I think, okay, good. I want to see the Georgia O'Keeffe. I want to see the Picasso. I want to see the Keith Haring. I want to see the Basquiat. And we walk into the next room, and there are a few sort of nondescript paintings on the walls, and that's it. There's nothing else there. So we come back out, and I say, is there another room where the rest of the exhibit is? And she looks at me, the girl behind the desk, and she said, this is our space. This is it. I said, this is it? You had a half-page ad in the Miami Herald listing at least a dozen impressionist, modern, and contemporary masters, but all you have is the one Andy Warhol? Yeah, that's it. Now, maybe there's something that we're not privy to. I guess maybe in the art collecting world, you see a half-page ad like this in the Miami Herald, and you know you're only going to get one Warhol and nothing else. We were stunned. We turned around and came home, and the house is still a mess. Okay. So anyway, I thought I'd share that with you. Next time, you know, I will make sure to call the gallery and say, what really is on display here? I mean, the gallery we went to last week with the Rick Allen display was, there had to have been 30 or 40 of his paintings there. I was stunned. You can tell me I'm stupid, that, I'm culturally challenged or something, that I should have known. I didn't know. Yeah, we got conned probably by any account. You're right. But why spend the money on a half-page ad? And it was probably a contractual thing to get the Warhol paintings in there. I'm telling them about the Warhol. Oh, and then, so David says, we're getting ready to go back out and drive back home, another hour-long drive home. And David says, is there a restroom I can use? And she said, no. No, not even, you know, you can go next door, or I'm really sorry. Just, no. And we went, okay. And we walked out. a very surreal end to the weekend. We would have been better served had we cleaned the house, but we didn't. Anyway, so that happened. So I get home, and I read the newspaper. Now, I don't know if it's, I don't. It wasn't probably in this order, but it's my segue into the next topic. I just had to share that with you because it was so absurd. Oh, we thought we were, you know, going to a gallery to see a very cool exhibit, and there was nothing there. All right. So I pick up the Miami Herald. This is yesterday. And going through it, I see this one headline. It reads, Die, Jew. Jewish family visiting South Florida harassed while walking in Bal Harbor. Bal Harbor is an expensive section of Miami Beach, basically, North Miami Beach. A lot of very expensive shops and stuff there. And let me just read to you the first couple of paragraphs from this article. As a Jewish family visiting South Florida from New Jersey walked along Collins Avenue in Bal Harbor earlier this week, four men in an SUV began hurling insults and garbage at them. They pulled up. Wait, hold on, I got to do this. They pulled up and started shouting, Free Palestine! Fuck you, Jew! Die, Jew! Eric Organ said Friday. They also said, quote, We're going to rape your daughter. We're going to rape your wife. Who yells that? This incident, which is being investigated by Bal Harbour police, came days before Israel and Hamas announced a ceasefire to end the recent spate of violence between Israel and Gaza. Over a span of 11 days, the ceasefire began Friday. Israel targeted militants across Gaza with airstrikes, while Palestine fired thousands of rockets into Israel. The violence led to the deaths of at least 230 people in Gaza, including 65 children, and 12 people in Israel, including two children, according to news reports. The tension in the Middle East has caused a, quote, dangerous and drastic surge in anti-Jewish hate in the United States, according to the Anti-Defamation League. In fact, let's see, the CEO of the ADL, Anti-Defamation League, Jonathan Greenblatt, was on one of the Sunday shows yesterday.
At ADL, we've seen just week over week since the incidents, since the fighting in the Middle East started, more than a 50% surge in anti-Semitic attacks here in the United States. From New York City to Los Angeles to Illinois to Florida to New Jersey to South Carolina and more. So incidents like assaults in broad daylight, Jewish people being chased down and beaten, reports from Southern California of men throwing bottles at homes that had Jewish mezuzot on their doors, right? Acts of vandalism at synagogues where a pro-Palestine demonstration ends up with broken windows and graffiti on a Jewish house of worship. And just out and out acts of harassment that literally things being said to people that I can't repeat on the air. So we are deeply alarmed by this because literally just yesterday, President Biden signed into effect the COVID-19 Hate Crimes Act, which was prompted by Asian Americans being held collectively responsible for policies of China. In the same way, from President Biden on down, we need elected officials to do what Mayor Garcetti did, to say holding Jews collectively responsible for Middle East policies, that's not activism, Nicole, it's anti-Semitism. Yeah. And it should have no place in our political dialogue. And the people committing these crimes need to be brought to justice.
Without a doubt. Now, let me state something unequivocally, and I've said it before, but I guess it needs to be said again. Although I'm guessing if you're listening to this show, you already get it. Maybe not Linwood, but he's learning. Being Jewish is not the same as being a Zionist. Being Jewish does not mean you support the current government of Israel. Being Jewish doesn't even mean that you support Israel. All right. I meant to mute this, but let's go back to the phones. Hi, who's this?
Yeah, this is Addison calling out of VA.
Hi, Addison. Calling out of where?
I'm calling out of Virginia.
Oh, Virginia. Gotcha. Hi, Addison. What's on your mind?
Okay. I want to ask you a question because the last call that you had, I want to respond to it because I think it needs to be responded to.
Okay.
I've had a conversation with my Jewish brothers and sisters.
Okay.
And I was just asking them about the Palestinian, Israeli conflict. Now, I'm going to ask you this question, none of my personal business, but are you a Jewish person?
I am a Jewish person. I've said that over and over again, and I was about to get into that. I am Jewish by heritage. I'm not religious, but by heritage, I am Jewish, and I'm proud of my heritage. But I have no love for or respect for or admiration for what they're doing now. The government under Bibi Netanyahu is reprehensible. What they are doing is horrible. So what I've been saying is because you're Jewish doesn't mean that you support what Israel is doing in any way, shape, or form. Maybe you do, but just being Jewish doesn't make it so. And yet, Jewish people are being harassed everywhere, something that I'm guessing you can relate to. Because of the color of your skin,
well,
you've been harassed.
I mean, yeah, true. You know, but what I was trying to get at is about the word that your last caller used, which is Zionism.
Zionism.
From what I've heard about those terms from Jewish persons, I may be in error, is that Zionism is nationalism. And Judaism is spiritual.
Right.
And
yes. Zionists.
The politics over.
Right. But for him to say that Zionists control the media, I'm sorry, that's as wrong and as offensive as saying the Jews control the media, and just as much of an anti-Semitic trope. It's wrong. It's just flat out wrong.
It's wrong, and I want to call and let you know that, I'll apologize for him.
Oh, you don't have to. He's him, and you're you, Addison. I don't expect you to apologize for what somebody else said. He's a different person.
At the same time, I have to say, because I have read a book called The Transfer Agreement by a Jewish person in 1984 that wrote it by the name of Edwin Black. And he explained how Israel was established, during the point of 1933 when the Third Reich took power in Germany. Now, have you ever heard about this book?
No.
Before I did?
No. And you know what? There have been millions of books. Let me suggest that you listen to today's guest and hear what he has to say. This is a man who's written 10 books. He is Jewish, but he's very anti-Zionist. He's pro-Palestinian. He's disgusted by what's going on, and he's been around for a long, long time. He's written 10 books on the subject. He's a political scientist, and this is his area of expertise. So why don't we hear what he has to say?
I'd definitely like to hear what he has to say, because I've been getting into some arguments with some right-wingers over the weekend who are putting up the Israeli flag.
Oh, God.
And they're classifying themselves as Jews, but they're really right-wing conservatives
exactly.
that are using Israel to cloak their racism.
Right. And it's prompting this violence because they are right-wingers. And don't forget, it's not only Jewish people, the hardcore Israel supporting Jewish people who are doing this. It's also those evangelical Christians who believe that Israel must exist and that all Jews must go back to Israel in order for their rapture to take place. We've gone through the rabbit hole, and these people are batshit crazy, but that's what they believe, and that's why they support Israel above all else. Because in their fantasy world, I guess if Israel doesn't exist, we can't be raptured, or they can't be raptured. I won't be raptured. I'm Jewish.
Now, I want to ask you one more question before I get off the line.
Okay.
In the response to him saying that the Zionists control the media,
mm-hmm.
is it factual that Zionism as an ideology has been put through the U.S. press as sort of a mixture in with Judaism?
No, it's just people are too lazy to go on the Google and look and see what the difference is. Being Jewish doesn't mean you're a Zionist, and being a Zionist doesn't mean you're Jewish. How about that? You can be both, but you don't have to. Exactly. One has nothing to do with the other, except that, it is somehow related to Judaism and Israel. But Judaism is not necessarily related to Israel. I mean, I've never been to Israel. I'm Jewish. I've never been there.
Thank you for answering that question.
You got it. I'll be curious to hear back from you after you hear the interview with our guest, who, by the way, I've not spoken with yet. I've just read a lot about him, and he seems like a fascinating man. So to give sort of the other side, from the guest I had on last week. So, Addison, I'm going to run because I want to share a couple more things before Norm gets on the line. So thanks for calling, though. All right. So just to give you an example of like where I'm at, I woke up this morning, turn on the TV to CNN, and there is John Berman, who I, pretty much watch these days in the morning with Brianna Keeler, just because I can't do the morning Joe thing anymore. So here's a little bit of what he had to say about this story, and it is a story. Here we go.
We have new reporting this morning on evil lunacy. That is how Republican Liz Cheney described new statements from Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene. Evil lunacy. And to be honest, Cheney was being polite, because Greene, whose understanding of comparative religion includes a belief of Jewish space lasers, equated mask requirements in the House to the Holocaust.
You know, we can look back in a time in history where people were told to wear a gold star, and they were definitely treated like second-class citizens, so much so that they were put in trains and taken to gas chambers in Nazi Germany. And
oh, my God.
Exactly the type of abuse that Nancy Pelosi is talking about.
Exactly the type of abuse that Nancy Pelosi is talking about. Okay, I'm going to shut up and let John Berman take it.
Now, this is not only... historic.
That's Breonna Keeler.
It's abhorrent, John.
It's abhorrent.
It is not only ahistoric, it is abhorrent. It's also apparently allowable under House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, who hasn't commented on it and refused to punish Green for past anti-Semitic statements she made. Wearing a mask compared to the murder of 6 million people, it's so far beyond the realm of decency, it could only possibly be made worse by comments from Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yep.
I stand by all of my statements. I said nothing wrong. And I think any rational Jewish person didn't like what happened in Nazi Germany. And any rational Jewish person doesn't like what's happening with overbearing mask mandates.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Any rational Jewish person? I'm Jewish.
Me too.
I'm not at all religious. And thank God my family made it to this country decades before the Holocaust. But that's my heritage. And I promise you that Congresswoman Taylor Greene, she thinks I'm Jewish.
Yeah.
So as a rational Jewish person, let me just say to Marjorie Taylor Greene, don't you dare speak for me. Not if you're going to compare health measures or anything to the Holocaust. In a tweet last night, she said, I'm sorry if my words make people uncomfortable.
Oh, God.
No, they don't make me uncomfortable. They make me sick.
They make me sick. They make me sick, too. Again, I didn't know I had so much in common with John Berman, but he basically, it sounds like he's where I am. He's Jewish by heritage, not religious. But words like that are deeply offensive. Deeply offensive. Yes, I have family, and I don't even know my family history. I wish I could go on, find your roots Henry Gates and find out my story. I mean, I know I have grandparents who came from Russia, Romania, and Austria. I don't know if any of them were in camps. I don't know. Because my family didn't go there. But this stuff is just the fact that, and not only that. So I read to you from Sunday's paper. Open the newspaper today. Miami Herald. It's a scary time for Jews as attacks on U.S. streets bring heightened security and anxiety. Now, and I'm saying this, as we've witnessed in the last few months, heightened levels of violence against Asian American people. A hatred ratcheted up by the former guy who insisted on blaming the onset of this pandemic on the Chinese. And the mental, geniuses out there, they don't know the difference. They figure anyone who's Asian must be Chinese and therefore responsible for COVID. So there have been these horrible attacks. We already know what black and brown people are going through on a daily basis. And God forbid you get pulled over by a cop, one who's maybe, roiding up a bit. And now, look, the persecution of Jews is nothing new. This has been going on for centuries. Centuries. But you would think we're a little more enlightened than that. Let me share a little bit of this. Remy Franklin, a jiu-jitsu practitioner and security volunteer, stood guard on La Brea Avenue in Los Angeles on Saturday afternoon as the neighborhood's highly visible Orthodox Jewish population made their way home from Shabbat services. Franklin, who is Jewish and grew up in Malibu, smiled broadly as people walked past him. Good Shabbos, he said. Stay safe. People smiled back in appreciation. It was the second day in a row that Franklin, 37, and other volunteers had come to the Fairfax District to offer protection to a community on edge. Some stood on the sidewalk offering to walk people to and from the synagogue, asking if they felt safe and just wishing them a happy Sabbath. Others were more incognito, sitting in parked cars. It continues. Last night, seeing you guys walk home, it was surreal, said one man who stopped to thank Franklin. We're proud to have you. Franklin said he felt called to offer his support after multiple recent anti-Semitic attacks, including a violent attack on diners at a West Hollywood area sushi restaurant. This is unbelievable. A video capturing part of the Tuesday night attack shows people in a caravan of cars flying Palestinian flags yelling, "Fuck you," and "You guys should be ashamed of yourselves," as they drove by the restaurant. Similar incidents of Jewish people being harassed and even attacked in the last several days have been reported in New York City and Miami Beach, and it goes on like this. Again, being Jewish, being attacked by people, being hated simply because of your heritage is nothing new. But for these idiots, you know, I call them the poorly educated. They're the ones that, you know, Trump loved. They believe that if you're Jewish, that means you are complicit with every bad thing that the Netanyahu government does. I mean, that's the way it appears. That's the way it appears to someone like me, who's an American Jew, who, again, appreciates the heritage. But I am not in favor of what's going on. And so many people, just like our first caller today, Linwood, doesn't understand the difference. A Zionist, I believe, is somebody who is hyper-focused on Jews have a right to their homeland and Israel is the land of the Jews. But you know what? I should bring in our guest because he knows a whole lot more about this subject than I do. Norman Finkelstein, thank you so much for joining us today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're the author of like 10 books. The most recent one being, I got to find it here. I thought you were coming a little later, and so I wasn't ready for you, but I saw you were there, and I figured we should just get you on now. Your new book, your latest book, is a couple of years old already, and it is about Gaza. It is, tell the whole title of it, Gaza.
Okay. The most recent book was called I Accuse.
Oh, okay.
That's about Gaza. And then the book immediately preceding it was also about Gaza, and it's called Gaza, An Inquest into Its Martyrdom.
That's what I was looking at. And its account of the humanitarian crimes committed by Israel. Sorry, I'm covering your picture. By Israel. Against the Palestinians in Gaza. If you don't mind, because this is your area of expertise, there's a lot of misconceptions out there about Israel, about who lives where, about how it was created. Can you give us a brief history of how Israel came to be what it is and Gaza came to be what it is and the West Bank came to be what it is?
I'll do my best to be brief, but okay. You understand.
It's complicated.
Put in 73 years of history in a few words is difficult.
I do.
So let's try to do it as simply as I possibly can, and then you can ask me for specifics.
Okay, sounds good.
There was an area called Palestine. It came under what was called the British Mandate after World War I. In 1947, the United Nations General Assembly recommended that Palestine be divided into a Jewish state and an Arab state. A war ensued between 1947 and 1949. By the end of the war, Israel had created a state, or the Zionist movement had created a state which became known as the State of Israel, and it occupied approximately 80% of that area that was the British mandated Palestine. About 20% did not come under Israeli control, and those two areas came to be called the Gaza Strip, which came under Egyptian control, and the West Bank, including East Jerusalem, that came under Jordanian control. In the course of the 1947 to 49 war, Israel evicted approximately 750,000 Palestinian Arabs from the area that became the State of Israel. And those 750,000 Palestinian Arabs then came to be called the Palestinian refugee question. So when you hear references to Palestinian refugees, overwhelmingly, but not entirely, It refers to the Palestinians that were expelled from the area that became Israel in 1949. And those Palestinian refugees ended up in refugee camps in the West Bank, in Gaza, and also scattered throughout the Arab world, predominantly Lebanon, but also Syria, Syria and Jordan. Now, we move to 1967. Mm-hmm. There is another war. In the course of the next war, Israel expels about 250,000 Palestinian Arabs. And then after the war, another 250,000. So about 500,000 Palestinian Arabs are expelled from the areas called the West Bank and Gaza. Those two areas now came under Israeli control. So between 1949 and 1967, the Gaza Strip was under Egyptian control, the West Bank under Jordanian control. After 1967, those two areas, including East Jerusalem, come under Israeli control. And those areas came to be called the occupied Palestinian territories, the West Bank and Gaza. Now, the whole area was the totality of British-mandated Palestine. It's now completely under Israeli control, except the West Bank, including East Jerusalem and Gaza, are called occupied Palestinian territories. So that's the geography.
Okay.
What's happened in the most recent months, not even years, the most recent months, is that human rights organizations have redefined the nature of the problem. Up until literally a few months ago, the international community had more or less agreed Israel would remain as it is within the territory it occupied before the June 1967 war.
Right.
And beside Israel, a Palestinian state would be created in those occupied Palestinian territories, namely the West Bank, including East Jerusalem and Gaza. That was more or less what came to be called the international consensus.
Okay.
Israel as is in its pre-June 67 borders, a Palestinian state within the West Bank, including East Jerusalem and Gaza.
And would that be the two-state solution that we hear about?
As I said, that's what it was until literally about a month or two ago.
Wow.
But now human rights organizations, in particular B'Tselem, the main Israeli human rights organization monitoring Israeli human rights violations in the occupied Palestinian territories, and Human Rights Watch, the main human rights organization in the world, mm-hmm. both of them have recently been saying, well, there's a problem not just with the Israeli occupation in the West Bank, including East Jerusalem and Gaza. There's a problem with Israel itself. Namely, Israel is a regime, or I should say, the Israeli state is based on the principle, this is B'Tselem talking, based on the principle of Jewish supremacy, and that this is an apartheid state. Mm-hmm. That's what Israel's leading human rights organization has now concluded.
Wow.
Israel as a whole, not just the occupied Palestinian territories, but Israel as a whole, from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea, it is a Jewish supremacist state based on the principle of apartheid. Human Rights Watch has now been saying, it came out with a report about 2 weeks ago entitled A Threshold Crossed. And Human Rights Watch says that the whole area, not just the occupied Palestinian territories, the whole area is based on the principle of Jewish domination.
Wow.
And so the terms of the debate seem now to be changing. Whether for better or for worse, I'm not saying right now. I'm just trying to bring your viewers up to the current, your viewers and listeners,
right.
Bring them up to speed on what the current debate is. Now, the other aspect is, it's one thing to say these things in theory, in the law, in abstraction. It's quite another when the abstractions materialize before your eyes. So in the course of the last Israeli assault on Gaza, in the course of it, there were massive uprisings, not in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, not in Gaza, but in Israel, in the what are called the main mixed cities. Mixed cities means there's a Jewish and an Arab population.
Right.
So in cities like Lod, Jaffa, Haifa, there were major, you'd have to say, you might call it Ferguson-type uprisings, Ferguson meaning
sure. Missouri.
Here,
yeah.
In those cities. And right now, as we speak, literally as we speak, Israel is engaging in a mass roundup. It put the figure, it's calling for the arrest of already about 1,400 Palestinians have been arrested. Palestinian Israelis have been arrested. And now they're engaging in another mass roundup of about 500 more. They set a figure, we're going to round up 500 more. So my point here is that the descriptions of Human Rights Watch and B'Tselem, they now are materializing in a reality. There is certainly not a civil war, we're nowhere near that, but there's massive civil unrest in Israel now mm-hmm. at the treatment meted out to it by the Israeli Jewish supremacist or government, if you believe B'Tselem, or the regime based on Jewish domination, if you agree with Human Rights Watch. So that's just a long way of saying, as we literally speak, the picture is changing significantly, and the terms for resolving it, what, as you correctly say, called it the two-state solution, those terms may be becoming, I'm not saying certainly, mm-hmm. but they may be becoming obsolete. We may be in a period of flux. We might be in a period of transition where the situation is going to get more complicated. I don't want to say a lot more complicated because I don't know yet. We're in a period mm-hmm. of transition. But the situation is becoming more complicated. And there is a certain irony there because the international community was offering Israel a solution, the two-state solution,
right,
which would have left its own state more or less intact. In other words, the international community was willing to accept Israel as a state, which claimed a right to a Jewish majority and claimed a right to privilege Jews.
Mm-hmm.
That was more or less accepted. It was, so to speak, built into the notion of a Jewish state. But the Israelis were so intransigent and so arrogant that they thumbed their nose at that possible solution. And now they're faced with a situation where the very notion of a Jewish state, the very notion of a Jewish state is being called into question, because built into that notion is the idea of Jewish supremacy and Jewish domination. So in a way, in my opinion, if you are a supporter of the idea of a Jewish state, of a Jewish majority, then ironically, because Prime Minister Netanyahu and his predecessors were so arrogant and so intransigent that they kind of shot themselves in their own feet. They did. They had an opportunity. I think the opportunity is being lost now. I think because of the Black Lives Matter movement and because of this heightened sensitivity to notions of white supremacy and white domination in our own country, those notions have now spread to places like Israel, and people are feeling very uncomfortable with the idea of Jewish supremacy Jewish domination.
Right. And I get everything you're saying, but let's step back for a second and talk about the reason that there was a perceived need for a Jewish state. For centuries, for thousands of years, Jews have been persecuted. They wandered from land to land. They're always being persecuted, never having a homeland. That's why, and again, I'm an atheist Jew. My religious education seriously comes from watching the movie The Ten Commandments. So I am not a religious scholar. I'm not an expert on Israel. I'm Jewish by heritage, and I do know that there was a reason that Israel was created. It was a different world back then, but the fact remains that the Jews have been persecuted for thousands of years, and they wandered, and they found their home. Now, you talk about they had an opportunity to do this. I was under the impression, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that when back in the day before Hamas, when it was Yasser Arafat and the PLO, and there were talks about a two-state solution, that it was the Palestinians who said, no, we're not going to do that. Am I wrong?
Well, I don't like to sort of be categorical and peremptory and say, you are wrong.
Okay.
There's something a bit arrogant about that. So I just would want to say that in my view, having written, I don't know if I've written 10 books. People are saying 10 books now. I don't even know how many books I wrote. And some of them weren't very good, so I wish they would be forgotten. But I have studied it the whole of my adult life. I think the record clearly shows that by the early 1970s, the Palestinian, what was called back then, the Palestine Liberation Organization, the PLO, under the leadership of Yasser Arafat, was prepared to accept two states on the June 1967 border. But the Israelis, like most states, they have the power, and unless they're compelled to, they're not about to withdraw. There are not all that many countries in the world which, once having occupied territory, carry out a withdrawal. That's not a frequent occurrence in history.
Right. And so, every country basically on the planet possesses its territory as a result of taking it from the previous owner.
And that's actually a fair point to return to your earlier remark, which is that moral standards change. Mm-hmm. And what's acceptable in one era then can become unacceptable in another era. And beginning in the 20th century, really, you would say in the interwar period between World War I and World War II, this principle gradually crystallized. It was a slow process, and the principle was, it's inadmissible to acquire territory by war. Now, exactly as you said that historically, that's how states came into being,
that's
by
right.
conquering other people, and then gradually, that became unacceptable. You're certainly aware that there was a certain point in history where slavery was acceptable.
Oh, yes.
There was a certain point of women was acceptable. And as morality evolves practices which were acceptable once become unacceptable later now or subsequently. Now, to return to your point, I think it's correct to say, as you said a few moments ago, that in the wake of World War II, there was a very broad sympathy for the martyrdom that Jews endured during World War II, climaxing in the Nazi Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of that experience, there was a willingness to accept what you might call, I'll just use this expression, accept a Jewish exceptionalism. That is to say, states are not supposed to discriminate between their citizens. That's an elementary democratic principle. All citizens should be equal in the eyes of the law, an elementary democratic principle. But there seemed to be a willingness on the part of the international community, in light of what Jews endured during World War II, to allow for a certain, let's call it, margin of exceptionalism. But that was 73 years ago.
Oh, mm-hmm.
That was 1945. We're now headed towards 2025. It's a long time past.
Mm-hmm.
And the sensibility of young people, or the new generations in particular, their sensibility is different than ours. Ours is different than, say, those who passed through World War II. And the willingness to accept the idea of a Jewish exceptionalism has now significantly diminished. There is a feeling, it began with South Africa,
mm-hmm.
the notion of one person, one vote, one person, one vote. It then became more pronounced during our own civil rights movement, the principle of equality under the law. And now those principles, the South African anti-apartheid movement, the civil rights movement, those have now been, they've become more salient in light of the Black Lives Matter movement. So if you attended the demonstrations in support of the Palestinians, if you look at the social media, what's become the new hashtag? The new hashtag is Palestinian Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
And that resonates for young people. Palestinian Lives Matter, it's Black Lives Matter now gone abroad.
Right.
And so there is, as I said, these things are in flux now, but you see something happening. And so the tolerance for Jewish exceptionalism or Israeli exceptionalism has now significantly diminished. And then there's a counterpoint to that. The counterpoint is young people look at the social media. What do they see? They see these groups of Jewish hoodlums breaking the windows of Arab businesses in East Jerusalem,
right.
In Haifa. Well, what image does that conjure up in your mind? Roving bands of Jewish toughs taking out sticks and breaking the glass windows.
Okay, but Norm, I need to interrupt here and to play devil's advocate and give both sides. We're also seeing Gaza firing thousands of rockets into Israel. Now, the reason that this latest round of hostilities, if you want to call that, from what I understand, comes from the Israelis trying to evict Palestinians from their homes in the West Bank that they've lived in for generations, so that Israelis can settle there. Well, and so this is how the Palestinians fight back. It's wrong on both sides. And
no, I can't agree. Okay, I should not have cut you off.
Okay,
continue.
I was going to say my other point is that I never looked at it as Israeli exceptionalism. It's just that they needed a place to live, someplace where they could go unfettered and be able to return home. That's the right of return, that there's a place for Jewish people to go to, because for long, long, long time, there was no place that Jews could go. When they came here, even during World War II to escape the Nazis, that many were turned away. So that's why I understand Israel was created.
Okay, look, you asked two substantive questions. Okay. I'm not sure how much time we have to answer them.
As much as you want.
So, let me take the second one first.
Okay.
Let's just remember what the first one was. Right. What was the impetus for everything that happened afterwards?
Yes.
Now, where do we begin, so to speak?
Gotcha.
Well, let me take your second question first. Now, it does happen that both my parents passed through the Nazi Holocaust. It's not they really passed through it. There are a lot of people who say they passed through it. They didn't pass through it. My parents passed through it. My mother and father were in the Warsaw Ghetto. They were both from Warsaw. They were in the ghetto till 1943. After the Warsaw Ghetto uprising, those who are still alive in the ghetto, about 30,000 to 40,000 Jews, were deported to Majdanek concentration camp. Both of my parents were deported to Majdanek. My mother ended up in two slave labor camps. My father ended up in Auschwitz. He was in the Auschwitz death march. And they met in a DP, displaced people camp, and then to Austria, married, and then eventually wound up in the United States. Okay. Now, my parents were very decent human beings. They weren't always, they were very imperfect, in the implementation of what they said. But what they said was very principled. In my opinion, and it's not just my opinion, it's a fact. Mm-hmm. And I posed the question that you just posed to me on a quite frequent basis to, for example, my late mother. Because my late mother was of the opinion that the Jews needed a homeland, mm-hmm. for exactly the reason that you said, that she said during World War II, nobody wanted us. Mm-hmm. So we need a place to go. And I was willing to accept the reasoning of my mother because I expected her moral judgment and I respected her historical experience. There was an authentic voice speaking there. And I put to her the question. I said, Mom, when you speak about a Jewish refuge, what does that mean for non-Jews who live in that place? Mm-hmm. In your mind, in your thinking, are they to be treated equally with Jews? She said, of course. I said, well, if they're treated equally, how do you reconcile that with calling it a Jewish state? Because if you call it a Jewish state, you're in effect saying this state belongs to Jews, mm-hmm. which is in effect saying it doesn't belong to non-Jews.
Right. Right.
So what about the non-Jews who live there? And I have a vivid recollection of what my mother said to me. Quote, leave me alone. She right. kind of mm-hmm. didn't want to have to deal with it.
Sure.
She recognized there is a conflict there. She was yes. an extremely bright woman. She was a Jewish woman. She was the president of her grade, of her class, president of her school, went to study mathematics at Warsaw University. Wow. She had a very logical, lucid, clear mind. It was logical, lucid, and clear enough to recognize there's a problem here. You want it to be a Jewish state, but what does that mean for those who are not Jewish? And what we're seeing now in Israel, that problem is playing itself out.
Yep.
There are 20% of the people in that area called the State of Israel who are not Jewish. And they feel that they are second class and worse citizens.
Yeah.
And they won't accept it. But if they get full, complete equality, it ceases to be a Jewish state, except maybe in symbols, maybe in the national language, maybe in the calendar days and holidays. That maybe it'll still be Jewish. But in terms of rights of citizens, distribution of taxes, all those sorts of things, if there's real equality, it ceases to be a Jewish state. So you have a contradiction there. Mm-hmm. And the fundamental fact is, as we speak, the Palestinian Arabs in Israel seem as if they're no longer willing to tolerate that contradiction. The Palestinian, first of all, let's take basic facts. 93% of the land in Israel, 93% is state land. It's owned by the state. And by law, that land is only to be used for Jews. That's the law. All right. 93% of the land is owned by the state, and it's only to be used for Jews. Number two, Palestinian Arabs constitute about 19% of the Israeli population, but they are overwhelmingly confined in what are called Palestinian municipalities, which constitute only 3% of the land. And then you go, I mean, I'm just giving you the highlights. Mm-hmm. This is a state, as B'Tselem said, that's based on the principle of Jewish supremacy.
Right, okay.
The land is for Jews. Mm-hmm. The Arabs are to be confined and squeezed
right.
and squeezed into less and less land. There are literally, there are 900 towns in Israel, 900 towns where Arabs are not allowed to live.
I got it. Can I ask you this, though? There are Muslim countries where Jews are not free to live and worship
be,
right? So there's one Jewish state, right? But there's one Jewish.
But then you're saying because it's one Jewish state, they should get to discriminate.
No, I'm not. I don't think they should get to discriminate, but they should also not be discriminated against in the other countries in the area.
Why would I quarrel with that?
You wouldn't.
Why would I quarrel with that?
Right.
But you asked me to speak now on the question of Israel and the Palestinians.
Okay. Yep.
If you want me to speak tomorrow on the question of Saudi Arabia and the way it treats the Yemenis, this brutal blockade it's imposed on Yemen the last several years, I'd be happy to speak about that.
Right, but can we separate them? This is all part of our reality. And the fact is...
I don't think it's a useful way to address the reality. There's the younger generations use the expression, you probably know it. I live a kind of hermetically sealed life. The expression is, whataboutism?
Yeah.
Whataboutism,
yeah.
Meaning... the moment you raise any problem, they say, what about that? What about that? And at some point, that just becomes an evasion.
Mm-hmm.
There's a problem here. And we should address the problem. And then we can, of course, turn and address another problem.
Right.
But for the moment, you know, time is finite. Resources are finite. And my knowledge is finite. This is an area I happen to be knowledgeable
right.
about.
Gotcha.
And so I'm willing to talk about it. I wouldn't come on to speak about areas I don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm just trying to show that this is not happening in a vacuum.
It's not happening in a vacuum, but it's a problem.
It is a problem. You know, I agree.
And we have to accept it, and we have to be honest about it. You know, you asked me, I said we'd get back to that first question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I live in New York City, okay?
Mm-hmm.
In New York City, we used to, when I was growing up, we had a private home. And the New York City land laws are so strict, so stringent, that if you want to build a fence along your home, my parents didn't get along with anybody. You know, they were very unhappy people and they just didn't get along. So we eventually, my parents resolved in building a fence around their property. And in order to build that fence, if you build that fence 1 inch over your property line, because, you know, properties are so expensive, the neighbor has the right to tear it down. You know, we're hypersensitive about property.
Mm-hmm.
And then you read the reports, like the Human Rights Watch report on the threshold crossed. Israel is just constantly stealing Palestinian land. I mean, it's just land theft. Every day, literally, I am not exaggerating. When I'm exaggerating, I'll tell you, I'm exaggerating. I'm not engaging in poetry or hyperbole. Literally, every minute of every day, they're stealing Palestinian land. That's the game, the name of the game. It's land theft, land confiscation. By a sheer fluke, the situation in East Jerusalem, in Sheikh Jarrah, it blew up. It blew up because, one, it was a kind of a middle-class neighborhood. And if you're middle-class Arabs, like anyone, you have connections. And so they were able to get a large number of demonstrators, including Jewish demonstrators, Israeli demonstrators, to protest the evictions.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Israeli police came in, you know, New York Ferguson style. They came in, started to bang heads, break heads, and then the protests spread to the mosque, Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Horrible.
Now, Al-Aqsa Mosque is the third most holy site in the Islam religion. And then on the holiest day of the holiest month, in the holiest site, the holiest day of the holiest month, Ramadan, mm-hmm. at the third most holiest site, Israel went in, its troops went in, started banging up the worshipers, and the whole thing blew up. But my point is, it happens every minute of every day. I mean, you go into the West Bank, the sellers are burning down the olive groves. The sellers are stealing homes. Did you see? It was a very, you know, it was a very revealing scene. There was a rotund, let's call it rotund. I want to be politically correct. I don't want you to be canceled. Uh-huh. I don't want to be canceled. There was a rotund Jew from Brooklyn, probably from my neighborhood, because I live in the North Orthodox Jewish neighborhood. He goes, lives in, his name is Jacob. He's become famous now. He's in an East Jerusalem neighborhood. He's stealing a woman's home. She's talking to him. She says, "What are you doing? You're stealing my home." And he says, I'm quoting him now, "If I don't steal it, somebody else will."
Aye.
And, you know, the video went viral. And I say to you, you know, as an American, we're so hypersensitive to one inch on that property line.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have these land thieves, these land robbers, they're just stealing everybody's property. It's a rampage. It is a protracted rampage. It goes on every minute of every day. By a sheer fluke, what we saw last week was because of that concatenation. It started out in the neighborhood, spread to the mosque on the highest holy day, and then the whole world saw what's going on there. It's just land robbery. Now, you could say to me, "Well, Professor Finkelstein," or if you want to be more congenial, "Norm," you could say, "How do you think our country was created? Wasn't it stealing land?"
Yes, it was.
Day in and day out, steal land?
Yeah.
Yes. And then we make treaties with the what were called Indians, and then we break them. And
of course.
I would say yes.
Yeah.
And then I would ask to you, does that make it better?
No.
It was wrong then. It's wrong now.
Right.
We should not try to evade that fact. Face it in all its reality and say it's not only wrong, it's criminal. It's criminal.
Right.
I read these human rights reports and I think to myself, how did I react? Somebody comes in from another country, pretty much another planet,
mm-hmm.
and says, it belongs to me. A guy from Brooklyn comes in, and he's now living in her house.
Right.
I mean, I'll tell you, I can't even mentally comprehend that.
Okay. So then
you can even see interviews with him now, because mm-hmm. he's become kind of famous. It's like you're talking to a person from another planet. He can't even comprehend that he's doing something wrong.
So what would make it right? What if they could get rid of Netanyahu, bring in a reasonable government, and work something out where the... Is it possible to make it right? Look, we're talking about an area that has been fought over for thousands of years. And the two groups we're talking about have both been in there. It's not like the Jews were never there. They came in and evicted everybody and took over. This has been back and forth going on for centuries. How do we fix it? Because what we have right now is an untenable situation, number one. Number two, we have the problem because it's so, people are so passionate about it, and I understand why. I am. It kills me when I see read the news reports and watch the footage. It's horrific. But we also now have American Jews who have nothing to do with Israel being attacked simply because we're Jewish, and the idiots out there think they're interchangeable, think that a Jewish person means you're a Zionist Israeli, and that's got to stop too. The hatred has got to stop. So how do we fix it?
Okay, there's the broad picture of how do we fix it, and again, I'll get to that. Let me just take your second remark first. I've been around the block a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I got first involved in the early 1970s in the Israel-Palestine conflict. So I know the terrain, if I can put it that way. I've attended the demonstrations in support of the Palestinians since the Israeli assault on Gaza. If there were even a whiff of anti-Semitism, I would smell it. I have hypersensitive antenna to that. It's not there.
It's not there now.
I'm not going to allow people who want to try to create a distraction and try to use this crying of anti-Semitism to distract from what the problem is. There's a serious problem. People are being killed.
I agree.
And I have not seen any evidence in the demonstrations of anti-Semitism.
I'm not talking about over there. I'm talking about here, right now, and around the world.
I'm talking about here, too.
You're not seeing any instances of anti-Semitism? Then I need to end this interview right now because I think you're not being honest.
No.
You can listen to this and tell
me. If you want to tell me there are a few individuals who are saying nutty things.
Oh my God.
I would agree with you.
Wow.
I would call that a mental health problem. I would not call that an anti-Semitism problem. And I think there's a difference. If it were an anti-Semitism problem, presumably you would want to call in the police and you would want to focus on education.
Uh-huh.
If it's a mental health problem,
wow,
the person would be in need, I think, of psychiatric assistance.
Did you hear what happened in Los Angeles just the other day? On La Brea, people were eating in a restaurant. People came up to him,
how many people?
A group of people. But this is one incident, but it's happening everywhere. It happened in Miami Beach. You know what? I'm not going to. If you're saying there is no anti-Semitism and that anti-Semitic instances are not growing because of this, then I have to vehemently disagree with you.
I will get to that second point. You talked about growing. And that, in my opinion, is a reasonable concern. And the reason it's reasonable is, as you know, in 2018, Israel passed what was called the nation state. Mm-hmm. Israel is the state of the Jewish people, which means, you said to me earlier, you're Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
So the nation state law says that's your state. The nation state law says that's my state. The nation state law says that is the state of all Jews in Los Angeles and all Jews in Chicago and all Jews in Miami and all Jews in New York. Prime Minister Netanyahu tells the world, I'm quoting him now, he says he speaks and acts in the name of the Jewish people. So when you see these actions being carried out by a state that calls itself the state of the Jewish people, by a prime minister who says he's acting in the name of the Jewish people, then you can't entirely fool people for thinking that it's Jews who are doing that. Because that's what the state says. We are the nation state of the Jewish people. So who is the cause of the problem? The cause of the problem is a state which is acting in a criminal, reckless, ruthless fashion, and then saying, we're doing it in the name of the Jews. That's what the nation state law says. That's what Netanyahu says. He says, I am the representative of the Jewish people.
Okay.
So the problem is being created, and I agree with you. The problem has the possibility of escalating.
It already is.
Right now,
it already is.
It's utterly marginal. But is there a danger? Yes, there's a danger. Mm-hmm. And if you ask me, how do you address that danger? It's by Jews saying that state does not represent us. It has nothing to do with us. We did not vote for it. Mm-hmm. We did not elect it. We have nothing to do with it. That's their state. They're crazy. I'm not. They carry on that way. I don't carry on that way. Don't lump me with them. That's the way I think you fight.
Right. And in Israel, they have elections. Netanyahu has been defeated four times already, but he still holds on to power.
I think we have to face the facts squarely.
Yeah.
The fact is Netanyahu is the longest office-holding prime minister in Israel's history. The fact is he's been enormously popular through multiple scandals.
Mm-hmm.
He still manages to emerge
yep.
and win one election after another. Those are the facts. We can't escape them. The fact is there are only two countries in the world where Donald Trump was overwhelmingly popular among the population.
Yeah, here and there.
No, not I'm saying outside the United States.
Oh, outside the United States.
Two countries. There was one in Africa, I forgot. It might have been Liberia, or it may have been Ghana. It was something weird. And Israel. Israel is a white supremacist state and citizenry.
Mm-hmm.
And they like white supremacists. They like Donald Trump.
Right.
Donald Trump doesn't like black people. Israel doesn't like black people. Donald Trump likes to build a wall. Israel likes to build a wall. Donald Trump is the alt-right. Israel is the alt-right. We have to be honest about that. We can't engage in this kind of evasion like Netanyahu was defeated four times. He was also elected about 10 times. In fact, according to the crazy Israeli electoral system, I think he was elected five times the last month.
Yeah.
And they're now going to have another election, and they're probably not certain if they can't form a coalition. He's enormously popular there. You can't call him marginal. You can't call him unrepresentative. You can't call him aberrant. That's the fact. We have to face that fact. And we have to face the fact that he's claiming to be acting in our name.
Right. So well, he does not act in my name.
Why would you be surprised if non-Jews take him at his word?
I get your point, and it is a problem. The whole thing is a problem, frankly, and I was hoping to get some kind of solution. Obviously, it seems there is no solution, so we just keep killing each other.
I think the first solution is obey the law. Their basic it's not the full answer, but the basic principle is the land confiscations have to stop, the land theft has to stop, the land robbery has to stop, and the blockade of Gaza has to be lifted. Those are the basic elementary principles of international law. Gaza is 2,100,000 people. Of those 2.1 million people, one half are children.
Mm-hmm.
One half are children.
I hear you.
Children should not be blockaded for 15 years in a prison. That's not a controversial issue.
I agree. We don't.
Let's start with the basics. Let's lift the blockade of Gaza.
I agree.
And let's stop the land theft in the West Bank. Their home can be your home. Their home could be your home. People have no right to come in from Brooklyn and steal your home.
Agree. I agree. On that, we agree. Norman Finkelstein, his website is normanfinkelstein.com. You can find about all the 10 books he's written there. He's on Twitter at Norm Finkelstein. I'm sure you'll be happy to answer questions if people have some. I think, just so you know, my chat room agrees more with you than with me. And I don't disagree with you. I think we have a real problem in this country. I do think you're not seeing as much of the anti-Semitic stuff as I am. My first call, let me ask you this. First call came on the air. Somebody called in immediately and said, think the problem is the Zionists control the media. Do you not have a problem with that?
I would have to talk. Let's take Abraham Foxman. So Abraham Foxman was the former head of the B'nai B'rith Anti-Defamation League, mm-hmm. ADL. Mm-hmm. And he'll say, he writes in his book, and he was extremely right-wing, Abraham Foxman. But he says, it's true. Hollywood is overwhelmingly Jewish. Is that an anti-Semitic statement to make?
No, but saying the media is controlled by the Jews is.
Hollywood is part of the media. If you take publishing, very large Jewish presence. Mm-hmm. If you take influential magazines, let's say when I was growing up, New York Review of Books, Jewish, Nation, Jewish, okay. New Republic, Jewish. You can go down the line. Now, you can then say, but some of them are leftist Jews, some of them are right-wing Jews, some are communists, some are conservative.
Some are religious, some are not.
Yes, some are secular, mm-hmm. some are religious, yes. And then you can get into levels of nuance and differentiation. So that's why I said to you, when a caller said that, I want to get more information. I would want to discuss it.
Gotcha.
I don't think it's useful, personally, to shoot down people with labels, either for them to shoot me down with Zionists because I'm Jewish, or for me to shoot them down with anti-Semitic because I don't like what they're saying. I prefer a label is, let's call it, the first approximation. And then let's talk and talk. Let me figure out what you're trying to say. I'd rather get past the label, past the slogan, and try to figure out what you're trying to say so I could see whether maybe there's some areas where I agree with you, there are areas where I disagree with you, and maybe we can just agree to disagree.
Gotcha.
But I don't go for this trying to discredit the critics of Israeli policy by just dismissing them all as latent or blatant anti-Semites. No, I don't want to go there.
Let me ask you one final question. Do you believe Israel has a right to exist?
You see, that's another problem. Israel as what? As a Jewish state? As a state which just happens to have a set of borders? What do we mean by that? You see, that's the issue I tried to mention to you, I tried to suggest to you at the very beginning, that the major human rights organizations are now calling into
apartheid state
Israel's right to exist as a Jewish mm-hmm. state.
All right.
So it's a problem now. And I can't deny the problem, because if I deny the problem, I deny the legitimacy of the anger of people inside Israel who are treated as second class and third class citizens, and who, as we're speaking right now, are being rounded up in very large numbers. I don't want to deny the legitimacy of that.
I hear you. Okay.
So I need more information than when you ask me, does Israel have the right to exist? I would say, to exist as what?
Right.
What do you mean? To exist as what?
Okay. I guess we'll have to leave that for another time. Norm Finkelstein, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your input and your expertise and your your passion. And it's important that we talk about these things, because we're doing a lot of talking at one another and not a lot of talking with one another. We need to start talking with one another. Thank you very much for joining us today. I really appreciate it. All right. Bye-bye. Well, that was interesting. Here's the thing. Again, you know where I stand. I am no fan of Netanyahu's. That's an understatement. I think what they're doing to the people in Gaza and on the West Bank is horrific and disgusting. But for him to say he's not seeing any rise in anti-Semitism, let me just play this again real quick.
Just week over week since the fighting in the Middle East started, more than a 50% surge in anti-Semitic attacks here in the United States. From New York City to Los Angeles to Illinois to Florida to New Jersey to South Carolina and more. So incidents like assaults in broad daylight, Jewish people being chased down and beaten, reports from Southern California of men throwing bottles at homes that had Jewish mezuzot on their doors. Right? Acts of vandalism at synagogues where a pro-Palestine demonstration ends up with broken windows and graffiti on a Jewish house of worship. And just out-and-out acts of harassment that literally things being said to people that I can't repeat on the air. So we are deeply alarmed by this, because literally just yesterday, President Biden signed into effect the COVID-19 Hate Crimes Act, which was prompted by Asian Americans being held collectively responsible for policies of China.
Hello.
In the same way, from President Biden on down, we need elected officials to do what Mayor Garcetti did, to say holding Jews collectively responsible for Middle East policies, that's not activism, Nicole. It's anti-Semitism. And it should have no place in our political dialogue. And the people committing these crimes need to be brought to justice.
Yes, they do. And on that note, you know what? I usually end the show, obviously, we're on overtime now. Usually end the show with the news. Instead, today I'm going to end the show with a song. I know I won't get a copyright strike on me. Listen to the words to this. It's Judith Owen. The song is called Fork in the Road. Listen to the words. And it's all I can say. Listen to the words.
Okay, so we had a few technical problems on our Facebook Live. So we're going to do this again. Here is the real version that we really want you to hear of Fork in the Road. Ready, guys? Here we go.
These are strange times. We don't know where we're going, plays on the mind. All of this unknowing in all of our lives. It's all so terrifying, we're at the breaking point, it's true. Now is the time to change this world for better. We've read the signs, we've all been sent the letter, we've crossed the line. But if we stand together, there's so much we can do. If we give a little love, give a little love to each other. If we have a little faith, have a little faith in one another. Stand by what is right, not the dollar. If we turn away from hate before it's too late, and we lose everything this much, I know, oh, I know. We're at a fork in the road. The streets of this town
with peaceful anger to turn things around. We won't watch any longer and not make a sound. We need to right the wrongs here from the ground up. So if we just give a little love, give a little love to each other, if we just have a little faith, have a little faith in one another, stand by what is right, what is right. Not the dollar, if we just turn away from hate before it's too late. And we lose everything this much, I know, oh I know. We're at a fork in the road. We just give a little love, give a little love to each other. Have a little faith in one another. By what is right, and not the dollar, if we just turn away from the hate before it's too late. And we lose everything this much, I know. Whoa, we're at a fork in the road.